Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Bill Fagley, former curator at the New Orleans Museum of Art, about his wonderful essay in Pride of Place, The Making of Contemporary Art in New Orleans, which is about the Arthur Roger gift to the New Orleans Museum of Art. We'll also hear from literacy activist Megan Holt about what's coming up with One Book, One New Orleans. Bill Fagley is one of the most beloved figures in the New Orleans art world. He retired last year after 50 years as a curator at the New Orleans Museum of Art, most recently the Françoise Billon Richardson Curator of African Art. Today we're talking about Pride of Place, the making of contemporary art in New Orleans, which celebrates the recent Arthur Roger gift to the New Orleans Museum of Art and the current exhibition. Bill has contributed a wonderful essay to this book, Personal Recollections, Contemporary Art in New Orleans. Bill Fagley, welcome to The Reading Life.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, this is such a fabulous book. It's so beautifully designed and lively.
It isn't a beautiful book, yeah.
And it feels a bit like a scrapbook in some ways.
I know, yeah. That's wonderful that they put all of the informal photographs.
It's so accessible, too. You know, you can pick it up, look a little bit more.
Sure.
It's just great. So before we get to your essay, tell us a little bit about the significance of Arthur Roger's gift to NoMA, because it is an important gift.
It certainly is. It's a game changer because it really does fill out and complement what we already have. I say we, they.
Of course.
I guess it'll always be we.
A little part of your heart is going to be a NoMA for a long time,
right.
Yeah.
But it does really flesh out the collection in a wonderful way because he has incredible examples of the artists. They're the best. I mean, it's not mediocre works. These are some of the best works of each of these artists.
And so diverse. That is one of his great strengths.
Indeed, indeed. And he was a real trailblazer. You know, he really was before his time and was showing things that weren't normally shown or accepted. Anyway, he was in the forefront from the beginning.
Now, one of the things that I like to talk about, you know, when I look at my part of the world, the book world, I like to think about what literary infrastructure is, like things like festivals and publishers and writing programs and independent bookstores. And one of the fabulous things that you do in your essay is show us how the artistic infrastructure of New Orleans itself evolved over time. How all these different parts came together to form the community we have now. And I wonder if you talk about some of the early days, because that you cover a lot of that in your essay.
Well, what I did in the essay is Arthur had asked me to write about the last 40 years of the contemporary art scene in New Orleans, which coincides with the establishment of his gallery, which will be 40 years old next year. And that was fine. He said, Bill, you have been there. You've experienced it all. I can't think of anybody who could write it better than you. I said, thank you. But then I thought, you know, the first 40 years, that's certainly a good subject. But when you consider, and a lot of people forget or don't even realize that all art is contemporary at the time it's made. Ancient Greek art, ancient Egyptian art, it was all contemporary when it was made. So why not go back to the beginnings of Louisiana and talk about the art scene from that time forward? And that's what I did. And I began by talking about the painters, mostly coming from Europe, French and German painters like Vodachamp, who is one of my favorites. These early 19th century painters, and then I go on to Clegg and Buck and that era. and then come up to the Art Association, which is in the late 19th century.
And then, of course, you move on to the Arts and Crafts Club. And,
right.
And NOMA, the establishment of the Delgado Museum of Art, which is now NOMA, of course, and how that rock of the community has endured.
Right. Well, Isaac Delgado was really not an art collector, but it's been said, and I think it's, that his friends told him that this city needed an art institution, and he realized that, and so he made the initial gift of $150,000 to build the original building in City Park. And from there, we really didn't have a permanent collection. We had several pieces that he gave, but then things developed, and we really didn't have a professional director until the 1950s. It was run mainly by Arthur Fytel, who was a trustee of the museum, and Ethel Hudson. And she was kind of the general manager, if you will. She was an artist herself, and she inspired her father, Charles Hudson, to become a self-taught artist. And now his works are very well known. It was a slow beginning. And Alonzo Lansford, who was the first professional director, really started the ball rolling as far as acquiring art that was worthy of being in an art museum.
And look at NOMA now. My goodness, my
right.
goodness. Now, you tell one story in your essay that I thought was so fascinating that I had never heard, and it was about the 1940 Picasso exhibit.
Yes.
That was just such a lovely story of seizing a moment.
Yes.
So I hope you'll share that.
Well, again, Arthur Fytel, who was managing the operation at that time, he heard that there was this shipment that was stranded in the port of New Orleans during a sea worker strike. So it was an exhibition that was being returned from San Francisco to New York, and it was an exhibition of Pablo Picasso. So he thought, well, gee whiz, why is it just sitting there in the port? While it's sitting there, why don't we just bring it to the Delgado and show it? Which they did. So this unexpected exhibition contained really two of his masterpieces, his recognized masterpieces of the Demoiselle d'Avignon and Guernica, which at that point was only 2 years old.
Wow.
And Guernica was so large that they didn't have really any wall space big enough for it. So it's been said, and I can't prove it, but it's been said that they lashed it to the pillars in the center court of the museum to show it.
I love that story. That there's just nothing else. It's the
right.
improvisation, New Orleans' great gift. The
right.
paintings are here. Let's bring them out for the
That's
world.
That's right.
I love that.
And that was, we should credit Arthur Fytel for that.
So how do you feel about the art scene now? Aren't you just proud of your part in it? I mean, when you think of all the things you've witnessed, like the birth of the Contemporary Arts Center as well.
Sure.
All those things.
Yeah, I never think about being proud of it, but I'm really impressed by it.
There you go.
I've seen a lot of change, yes, in the last 50 years. And I think I'm very proud that New Orleans is a stage for contemporary art and is an art center now. And with the birth of the Contemporary Art Center, and now the Prospect International Triennial Series, which opens this fall in November, the
right.
fourth iteration of that. So yes, the galleries have multiplied. It's a very healthy art scene. And I think one of the reasons that we have so many good artists here is because artists aren't dumb. And they know where a good place is, and New Orleans is just a hotbed for artists to come here because they love the style of the culture that they find here in New Orleans.
And you talk about the fact that there have always been international artists who've come here, drawn
oh, yes.
by that kind of energy and
That's
culture.
Right. Well, right. Back with Photoshop and mm-hmm. yeah.
So talk a little bit about your long friendship with Arthur and his gallery. I mean, when he first started this enterprise, you didn't think it would work.
No. Arthur and I've known each other as long as I've been in New Orleans, and I live in the French Quarter, and he was a framer at the 927 Gallery on Royal Street. And we also went to the gym, and Arthur had much more success than I did, but anyway, we were at the gym one day, and Arthur came up and with his wide eyes and kind of innocence and said, "Bill, guess what?" And I said, "What, Arthur?" And he says, "I'm going to open up an art gallery." I said, "Arthur, that's incredible news. Where's it going to be?" He said, "On Magazine Street." I said, "Well, I can't wait. When September, it'll be the opening." And I thought to myself, this kid doesn't know what he's doing. It's never going to last, but we'll see. Well, how wrong I was.
It's a good thing to be wrong about, though. It really is.
Yeah.
But that's another thing you track so beautifully in this essay is the shifting centers of the artistic community. You know, like for a while, it was all in the French Quarter. And now it's kind of migrating, expanding into the Warehouse District, Julius Street. And with the Prospect events, it's all over,
Right. Really,
which I think is so exciting,
yes,
don't
indeed.
You?
Well, and also St. Claude has become
Yes. Quite
a center for more avant-garde experimental art. And then there's Magazine Street, which is kind of traditional art in general. And Julia is more established artists. So you have three different areas that kind of concentrate on three different things, more or less. They're all contemporary, certainly. But yes, and Prospect, you're right, does expand that. Like this year's Prospect is going to focus a lot on the river. And there's going to be a major piece by Kara Walker on Algiers Point, which will be a musical performance, and which will be continuous. And then there's going to be a piece on the Algiers Ferry, and there's going to be a piece on the streetcar that runs along the river, and there's going to be a bunch of sculptures in the new Crescent Park. So yes, art is everywhere.
You don't sound like you've retired, you know.
Well, I retired.
Do you like it? Do you like being retired?
I didn't like it at first because I didn't like the isolation. I didn't like being at home alone, not being with people and not having projects. And then I got over it. One of the things that has really helped me is to invent new projects. And those projects are serving on boards of art organizations and being an active board member. And that keeps me busy and active.
Well, this book is a really lovely testament to Arthur Rogers' place in our community and to your accomplishments as well. It's really fun.
Good.
So, can't wait to have more from you.
Okay.
We've been talking with Bill Fagley, longtime NoMA curator and contributor to Pride of Place, the making of contemporary art in New Orleans, the Arthur Roger gift to the New Orleans Museum of Art. The exhibit which accompanies the book is on view at the New Orleans Museum of Art until September 3rd. Bill, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.
Megan Holt is one of the busiest people I know, teaching at Tulane, serving on the boards of the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival and the Literacy Alliance of Greater New Orleans, as well as being the project director for One Book, One New Orleans. That's the hat she's wearing today as she talks about this citywide literacy initiative, which is getting underway right now. Megan Holt, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you for having me again, Susan.
I love these little annual get-togethers, these celebrations of the book.
I've been looking forward to it all year.
So you've chosen a really special and kind of different book this year. Tell us a little bit about why you made this choice.
Our selection this year is Counting Descent by Clint Smith. For those of you who haven't read it, it's a collection of poetry. And the more I think about it, the more poetry is so apt for this project, because so much of poetry is the way it hits the ear and the way it sounds when it's read aloud. And for that, you need a community. So what better genre to bring the city together than poetry? And this particular book is written by a New Orleans native. He writes what I would call a poetic autobiography of growing up in this city. It starts when he's a childhood. He talks about going to school. He talks about leaving New Orleans and really finding his own place within that city's rich history. But it's also one of those books that you don't have to grow up in this particular place to identify with it, because there are images of mom and dad dancing in the kitchen to a favorite song, and of going out onto the playground and learning lessons that you might not necessarily want to bring home to your parents, about realizing later in life what your parents are trying to teach you. And those are sort of universal messages that will resonate with anyone.
And he's just such a good guy.
He is.
I remember when the book first came out and he had his first reading and signing at Garden District Bookshop. And it was like a family reunion, you know, to see everybody around and supporting him in this terrific work. It's a real family story. And I like that a lot, too. So what is it about this book that speaks to you personally?
At first, it started with the Maze and Frankie Beverly poem because It reminded me of my mom. When I say your mom and dad dancing in the kitchen, my mom is a great kitchen dancer. She's fantastic. But honestly, the more I read about this and the more I think about it, what resonates with me personally is his descriptions of young black men growing up in New Orleans. And I think of my sons. And I think about the challenges they're going to face and how this book is helping me work through teaching them about those challenges that are very specific to how they look at this day and time.
Wow. So this is a bit of a different choice for one book, and you're approaching things in a different way. So tell us about some of the events that are coming up that people can take part in.
Well, on July 30th, we actually just had a great event at the Cabildo. Bill Lavender, Gion Smith, Melinda Palacio, and Louisiana poet laureate Peter Cooley all read from Smith's work. And so it was great to hear those different voices coming together to celebrate this particular book. At that event, we also handed out the schedule for our event season. We're starting off on August 24th with a kickoff party at Pelican Bay, jambalaya, cocktails, a real celebration of the book's work. And some of the other events that I'm really excited about all go around our community partners, because we have several. On the 18th of October, we're having an event with the Literacy Alliance of Greater New Orleans and with the New Orleans Public Library. It's at the Mid-City Branch. Adult learners are going to be reading this book in their classes, and we've developed a curriculum that will be taught. They're going to write their own poetry and get up and read it. And not only is it at the public library, but the public library is sponsoring the printing of a little zine. So all of the adult learners who write these poems and get up and read them will also get their work to take home, and it'll be a little collection of poetry from the voices of those who don't really get to speak for themselves that much for various reasons, low literacy being one of them. Also, on the 30th of September, I'm very excited about our new location for our Books and Brews. It's our annual book drive for Louisiana Books to Prisoners. This year it's at Urban South Brewery, who's doing some amazing things right now. Everyone who comes will get to partake in some brews if they donate a book or two or five, as long as they're paperback. Only paperbacks for Louisiana Books to Prisoners, please.
Why is this partnership so important for One Book, One New Orleans and Louisiana Books to Prisoners? I think that's an amazingly strong, good relationship that you've nurtured over quite some time. And you sponsor work days with them. So talk about the roots of that partnership and the reasons for it.
Well, we are the most incarcerated city in the most incarcerated state in the world. And it has been proven time and time and time again that low literacy and incarceration rates are inextricably linked. Not only that, if you get literacy help while in prison, your chances of going back decrease to half. You have a 72% chance of going back with no literacy help. If you get your GED while in prison, it goes down to 32%. That's why it's so important to us. And it's also very important to us because often when one goes in to a prison, you feel isolated, you feel far from home. And we want to let our citizens know that they're not forgotten just because they made a mistake. Here, get some books, be a part of what's going on back at home. We're thinking of you, we're advocating for you. Even if you have never met us, we really want you to come out and succeed.
Now, you're doing something a little different this year with a different community partner as well.
Yes. On August 14th, you can tune in to WRBH, which is the Reading Radio for the Blind and Print Handicapped in New Orleans, and you will be able to hear at 2:30 p.m. Clint Smith read the book himself. And that will air every weekday at 2:30 with a replay at 10:30 until the book is finished. It's the first time, to my knowledge, that we've had the author himself read the book and broadcast it for the visually impaired members of our community.
And he is one terrific reader, so you don't want to miss that.
Absolutely not. If you want a preview, check out his YouTube videos. They're phenomenal.
Aren't they great?
Yes.
And his TED Talks as well.
Yes.
So how do you measure the success of this program? What is it that makes it work in your eyes?
There are some tangibles, such as the number of books distributed. This year it will be 682.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm really excited about that number. And what really makes it a success for me is seeing how many people from different walks of life come out. Because our whole goal is to develop a sense of community around a shared reading experience. And seeing people who may normally never speak to one another in a conversation, listening to one another, based on a book. That's what makes it a success for me. It's a very intangible goal, but it is the thing that keeps me coming back year after year after year and trying to take this project to the next level.
And what is the next level? I know you have big plans for One Book, which I'm so happy about.
One Book, One New Orleans has been a project of the Young Leadership Council for 13 years. We started in 2004. The YLC has been amazing. It supports us and all of its other projects through events like its gala coming up on September 16th. But we've grown tremendously to the point that myself and a team of three other volunteer project leaders are doing about 1,000 hours of volunteer work on this project a year. And we've just realized if we want to keep growing and expanding our outreach and getting bigger and getting stronger and becoming more entrenched in this community, we are going to become our own nonprofit organization as of 2018, and I'm thrilled. People are excited. We're having our first fundraising event on September 6th. Come out to the Rusty Nail, enjoy some keg beer and some food. We're calling it the last cookout of summer. There will be raffle prizes. It will be a good time.
And in our tricentennial year, what a good thing. What a good thing to shoot for.
Can't wait. How many
years is it this year?
13.
Lucky 13.
Lucky 13, yes.
I remember, and such great books that you all have done. I mean, I remember from the very first with The Lesson Before Dying with Ernest Gaines.
Yes. And just since I've come on, the books have been phenomenal. Unfathomable City by Rebecca Snedeker,
yes,
and Rebecca Solnit. New Orleans Boom and Blackout by Brian Boyles. Kim Vaz DeVille's The Baby Dolls. And now this. I'm so thrilled. I feel like it's just been an embarrassment of riches since I came on.
I know. But that's because we have such good writers.
We do.
We are so lucky.
We do.
So keep getting the word out. We've been talking with Megan Holt, who's the project director for One Book, One New Orleans. Don't forget to pick up a copy of Counting Descent by poet Clint Smith and join this wonderful discussion. You can see Megan August 24th at the kickoff party at Pelican Bay. Megan, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Susan. These things make us proud to call New Orleans home.
Amen. Here's a book song for you. Sometimes childhood classics have the greatest staying power. Here's the Dr. Seuss-inspired Yertle the Turtle by the Red Hot Chili Peppers from their 1985 album Freaky Styly.
Look at that turtle go, bro.
On a Bowie Island of the Southern Massage, a Yertle the Turtle was a king of the pond. A nice little pond, it was clean, it was neat. The water was warm, there was a plenty to eat. Until one day, the king of the mob decided the king's and his room was too small. I'm a ruler of all that I see, but I don't see enough, and that's the trouble with me.
Yerto the Turtle King lifted his hand, and a Yerto the Turtle King gave a command. He ordered all the turtles onto one another's back. He piled them high into a 10 turtle's back. Oh, Yerto the Turtle, the things I now rule. I'm a king of a cloud, I'm a king of a mule.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Bill Lofelm discusses and signs The Devil's Muse, Thursday, August 3rd at 6 p.m. in Octavia Books, and there will probably be a couple of muses on hand to celebrate. Poets Ann Babson, Dionne Cherie Baker, and Andrea Panseca read at the Poetry Buffet Saturday, August 5th at 2 at the Ladder Library. The Not So Young Adult Book Club discusses The Romeo Catchers by Elise Arden, Monday, August 7th at 6 at Tubby and Coo's Mid-City Bookshop. Elise will be Skyping in to discuss the book with the book group. Lady Hubbard launches her wonderful debut novel, The Talented Ripkins, in conversation with Jamie Attenberg, author of All Grown Up, Tuesday, August 8th at 6 at Octavia Books. The deadline for submissions to the 2017 Ernest Gaines Award for Literary Excellence is coming up August 15th. This award honors rising African-American authors of fiction while recognizing Louisianan Ernest Gaines' many contributions to the literary world. Submissions may be novels or short story collections published in 2017 or galleys of 2017 publications. The winner will be announced in November, will receive a $10,000 award, and be honored at a ceremony in January in Baton Rouge. For more information, visit ErnestJGainesAward.org. Coming up in early fall, the Diana Pinkley Prizes for Crime Fiction will be presented Friday, September 8th at 6 at the NIMS Fine Arts Center at the Academy of Sacred Heart, 4301 St. Charles Avenue. The winner for Distinguished Body of Work is Canadian novelist Louise Penny, and the winner for Debut Novel is Trudy Nan Boyce of Atlanta for Out of the Blues. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at Octavia Books or octaviabooks.com and will be exchanged for a copy of Louise Penny's new book, Glass Houses, at the event. The Hill Memorial Library at LSU has a fascinating exhibit, Paper Tigers and Bibliobeast, featuring works focusing on the relationship between humans and other animals, as documented in the rare books, photographs, historical documents, and print materials in the LSU Library Special Collections. It's free and open to the public and runs through September 16th. For directions and hours of operation, visit lib.lsu.edu/special or call 225-578-6544. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.